But first, if you were on the run from someone or something, where would you hide? Well, if you're in Sydney, you could head underground, quite literally. Did you know that the city's skyscrapers are built over an elaborate network of secret tunnels? The tunnels were originally part of Sydney's rail network that were abandoned in the 1930s. They were then converted into air raid shelters during World War II. And in fact, Allied Commander General Douglas MacArthur used a section of them as an underground bunker to command his Pacific forces. Now, this labyrinth of eerie tunnels are now boarded up and were largely a forgotten part of Sydney's rich history until now. Writer B. Michael Radburn has used the tunnels as the setting for his new book, Subterranean. It's about a woman on the run from an abusive partner who was sheltered in the tunnels by a homeless man fleeing his own demons. And Baz Radburn joins me now. Welcome to Nightlife, Baz.
Hi, and Darren, thanks for having me. It's great.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, before we get to your book, Baz, can you tell us first how you first heard about these tunnels?
Well, I knew about them in my teens, that they were down there, and they weren't as guarded as they are now by any means. And there was a lot of graffiti around in those days too. So it was quite common knowledge, to be honest, back in, let's say, 60s, 70s.
Okay.
Then they guarded them a little bit better, and City Rail, as it was called at the time, sort of controlled it a bit better.
So when was the first time that you went down there yourself?
Well, back prior to 9/11, there were tours available through Sydney Trains, so you could arrange those up at Central Station and go down with a guided tour at the time. They were closed. They were closed in 9/11 and have remained so. At the beginning of the second Gulf War, I suppose it was called, because one of the southern tunnels that has the most interesting part of it, which is they call it Lake St Clair, it's a flooded tunnel, and it's got crystal clear water, and it runs right underneath Parliament House. So they as a security, you know, not wanting another Guy Fawkes night, they decided to close it off to the public, and it's been that way ever since.
Okay. And so how extensive are these tunnels, Baz? Where do they stretch from?
It's kind of like, picture it between, anyone who knows the Sydney Underground, between St James and Museum Stations. And it's very fitting too, because when you go through those stations, it's almost like going back through time. You kind of picture yourself in, say, in the London Underground during the Blitz. The signage is the same, and the tiles have really kept that restoration nice, and it's very fitting for the time. So it's kind of between those two sections there. It was originally built as the proposed Eastern Suburbs line when they did the cut and cover development for it. And that's essentially digging a hole, building the tunnels, and then covering them over. And then it was just abandoned. It was decided that they would do that at a later stage, and then they rerouted that later on, I think, in the 60s, 70s. So it's just sort of runs kind of north-south. It's a bit of a dogleg towards the east. So it's kind of... In the middle of that is St James Station. So there's a tunnel going either side, either end of that, if you can, I suppose. It's, mostly for Sydney people will understand that. But where it goes north under Parliament House, that's what they call Lake St Clair, and that's flooded. I think it was only during the beginning of the drought, this drought and the end of the last drought, they actually were considering using it as water storage.
Really?
Yeah. There's lots of a quick Google search will have the government at the time down there breaking ground and talking about, you know, so many megalitres of storage capacity underneath there, and it's just and that was another idea that was abandoned, and I'm glad it was, kind of. I like the idea that it's down there as it is. But the World War II section part of it is just, it is so close to the public, just beyond a green door, to be honest, on St. James Station. And that's where the old World War II, if you go in there, there's still a lot of the old signage and directions for the public as to where to go and what to do. The blast doors are still in there. There's sections there at one time that still had double bedding and that in there for the troops. Old workshops. The bell room is the most fascinating. There's a huge room over in there called the bell room, and it's simply that. It's like a diamond shaped bell. It gets quite damp in there. If you go down there in the wrong time of the year, you can get about 6 inches of water on there. But in the dry, it's quite good. But that's how they signal the all clear for the public to be able to go back up on up onto the streets.
Okay, so
and it still works today. You bang that, and you can hear it for miles.
Really?
Down there.
Wow.
Mm.
So, Baz, these tunnels were then converted during the Second World War into air raid shelters.
Yeah.
Did people ever go down there and shelter in them? Were they ever used?
Well, I've seen photos on the, that's a tough one to get to the bottom of. I've seen photos of the public going in and out of their accessed up near where was it? I think there was an access where the highway goes over the top there now. There was an access port down the bottom there somewhere. It's hard to tell from the photos, and there's very, very little in the way of maps now. All I can think about, I did think there was, don't quote me, I'm in Deering, but when the subs came into the harbour and started blowing things up, I think there was a few alarms held there. But there's certainly photos of people coming and going
there.
Out of those. Yeah.
Right. And as you mentioned, the public now has no access to this area. So who does have access to it?
Well, obviously the workers at City Rail, and there's the security up there is boosted right up now. There's a lot of the lighting still works all through those tunnels.
It's, right.
For the majority of it. And I think I do believe there's a lot of security cameras up through there so they can monitor that. But close to the stations, I believe they still use portions of it. It's only beyond, like I said, a couple of green doors where you can go into that. And I do know even now I've been able to access that just in preparation for the novel. You can see the first part of the tunnels where they use it for storage and it's quite clean and, yeah.
Now, the other fascinating part of this story that you touch on in your book, Subterranean, is that General Douglas MacArthur used part of these tunnels. How did he navigate his way around and what part did he use?
It was quite organised back then and there were other access areas. There's up near the gardens, the botanical gardens, there was an entry point there which eventually I think was destroyed in a fire that comes out over near the main gates, the top gates into the garden there near the cathedral. And that's long since gone. So it was quite organised. It's not like it is now, you know, in ruin. And even when you could access it, there was a lot of the Moreton Bay fig tree roots were coming down through the roof and through between the brickwork. But it was a very organised situation. Now Douglas MacArthur wasn't there for very long. He eventually went to there was another underground bunker that they used around Smithfield area. Now it's still down there, and a buddy of mine, his ex police rescue, was the last man to come out of that bunker, and they've sealed it up, and I'm not sure why they sealed it up, but they've sealed it up from the public. But somewhere underneath the streets of Smithfield around that area, there's a there's the last bunker that MacArthur used.
Mm, fascinating. Mm. Now to your book, Baz, In Subterranean. Yeah. You describe a group of homeless people who use these tunnels as shelter. Now, do people live down there, or is it something you just
not
imagined
anymore,
for this book?
Did. Yeah, when the access in those points of, say, through the 60s, 70s, maybe earlier, but the history part of it that I was looking at, there was certainly plenty of homeless living down there at the time. I think they were moved on quite regularly, but there was certainly, I know that for a fact, that they were using it.
Right. And as we know, Australia has a huge homeless crisis problem, and it's getting worse under this pandemic. Hundreds of rough sleepers and people homeless every night. And many of them, fortunately, during this period, have been moved into temporary hotel accommodation, so to get them off the street and keep them safe. But their shelter is still very precarious. So in your book, you focus on the plight of homeless people, but particularly of homeless war veterans. Now, how serious is the problem amongst war veterans?
Much more than I even could have imagined. When I was researching those figures last year, the best figures I could come up with was in a period of 1 year, 2018 actually, I think it was, there was, they count 5,800. This is nationwide, not just Sydney. But that's way too many, and that's a lot of those are young men and women from the current conflicts over the last 12, 13 years. It's very sad. It really hit me hard, particularly as a veteran myself. I didn't know that those were the sort of numbers,
And what's driving that high number, Baz, of particularly young soldiers into homelessness?
Well, you say so. Taking them off the streets, I don't know that that's the one and only answer, because you got to ask yourself, why are they on the streets? Why do they feel safer on the streets than they would at their home? It's the PTSD is it's not the same for everyone. It's different for every veteran out there. I tried to cover it in the book when Daniel was trying to explain to Cassie his take on it. She asked why he doesn't talk about it more, and he says something along the lines of, we don't talk to the public about it because they could never know what we went through, and we don't talk to each other because they do know what we went through. It's not a broad brush, for every case out there, it's different for each and every one of them. It's very sad, but that's the fact of the matter is that at the period they find themselves, the stage of life they find themselves, is they feel in more control and safer on the streets, and every story would be different.
The thing about people experiencing homelessness, they're often stigmatized and marginalized, with society not valuing their experiences, their talents, their abilities. Is that partly why you made the hero in your book someone who was homeless?
Yes, and also someone who was a veteran of the services too. I only picked the army because it was sort of, that's where I come from and it's a comfort zone. But it's a funny thing when you leave the services to go into civilian life, we're all very proud of what we do and but it takes a long time to realise that a lot of civilians and civilian life don't particularly care what you did, and that's okay. That's perfectly fine. Or they don't understand what you did, or the level of pride that you had in what you were doing. And you feel it's very lonesome coming out of the service. It takes a little while to settle into civilian life, and more so tenfold if you've come from active service.
And I
think that's the thing. The last 12 years, we've been quite busy on that front, unfortunately, overseas. And,
Yeah, you've been involved in a lot of conflicts. So what was the conflict you were involved with, Baz?
No, my service record was is a blimp in the ocean, I'm afraid. But so nothing like what I was writing about in there. It's and that's the thing. I think it's a lot easier for me because I've got that distance of this being fiction. You know, one person asked me what it's like to, you know, take yourself to some of these dark places. And yeah, you do. I think it's a lot harder for someone who's writing true crime or about an actual event. That's tough. It's like the detectives and the police and the victims and even the criminals who go there, that leaves a legacy. It leaves something, a residue on you. But I guess I've got that armour of between me and the story of being fiction, if that makes sense.
Mm. You also touch on another social issue in Subterranean, domestic violence. Now, why did you want to explore that through your characters?
There's a lot in this book, isn't there? It's carrying this story. To me, look, the genesis is that I had to live through it as a child, and it's funny. It's not all bad when you're a child, and if you think that is the way the world goes. If your parents, you think the rest of the world sort of fight and carry on and get quite violent with each other, it takes a little while to realise, you know, that's not right. So I did see it firsthand, and I guess you carry that with you, and we write what we know too. So this book is, it wasn't an epiphany of a story. It was things I've been carrying around for quite some time that just came together to be a story. You know, like all those experiences of knowing about the tunnels when you're young and wanting to explore them, and then finding as an adult that you can do that. The domestic violence that you witnessed through a child's eye, I guess, and then tried to make sense of as you grew older. The military side of it, connections with homeless vets. It all came together just almost overnight. Originally, it was a film treatment, and it kind of grew to the novella because I just kept adding more and more detail to it and spoke to my publisher, and eventually working with Helen Boltz at Atlas, and they've done such a beautiful job on it.
Yeah, there's some lovely illustrations in it as well.
It's really nice. I like the way she's worked it. You know, it's I'm really proud of it.
And what I really enjoyed too is that thread that you call the book Subterranean. You set them in these tunnels under Sydney, but you also deal with these subterranean issues that society doesn't acknowledge and confront, such as domestic violence and homelessness as well. So there's a nice sort of connection there. The other thing about Subterranean is it's a love story, and I understand you perfected that genre while writing fiction for women's magazines. So tell me about that.
Isn't that funny? I sit before you as a dedicated hairy biker and spent 10 years writing romance stories. It's kind of funny. I mean, romance is in everything anyway. I mean, there's a hint of it in any genre if you want to go down that track. But it's funny now that I hear people saying it. It's usually because I'm better known as a crime writer, and then there's a touch of romance, but this is a romance with a touch of crime. So it's funny when I hear other people say it. But yeah, it was a really pleasant accident. My first piece was published when I was young, 82 or something like that. And as a young man, I liked speculative fiction, horror, science fiction, all that sort of stuff. And I was doing okay with it, but later sort of dropped the writing side of it for having a young family, 6 years in the service. And then when I wanted to scratch that itch again and really badly, I thought, no, the CV's really lacking for the last 10, 12 years. So why not try and get, you know, build a CV before I sort of attempt the novel? And I just fell into the market through the 90s was quite strong with women's magazines, and it took me a couple of hits to get it. I really did believe that there was a there was a little bit of a formula there when I've read a few of those of my wife's woman's days. And
you're right.
I thought, I can do this. Yeah, and it was really good. It was a really good time. And I developed this great relationship with Julie Redlich. That's, she was the fiction editor for ACP then. And
did you
that's
write,
why I dedicated did, this book to her.
Right. And did you write under a nom de plume?
Yes, it was. It was, I thought, well, I didn't think, I knew that there wasn't a lot of men writing for this, so I was Jay O'Brien. So Jay could have been, it was very asexual. It could have been Jane or James.
Right. So we might have listeners out there that remember those stories, Jay O'Brien, and now be quite fascinated that it was actually a man behind those stories.
Yeah, I may not have been the only one because Julie had no problem with it. You know, I mean, I didn't try and pretend I was a woman. I just put that as my byline with my actual B. Michael Radburn after that, and she was fine with that. I don't know. It may not have been an issue. You know, I was probably overthinking it. But
okay. And why do you think you can write so well for women, Baz?
Well, you have to tell me that because even when you made that link with Subterranean about the Subterranean issues of those social issues, and I went first as soon as you said that, I said, oh yeah, I did too. I mean, you guys, my readers, know more about why I do things than I do. I write from the hip and I write about what feels good, and it just fit. I just. I must be in touch with my feminine side in dinner.
Maybe there's, you know, more hairy bikers out there who are.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and there are so many women riding out there now too, and people, don't get us wrong, you know. I mean, you can only talk about, you know, motorcycles and talk and you know, your war stories out on the road there sort of so long, and sooner or later you're talking about films, books, you know, other stuff. I mean, they're all human.
Yeah, and in terms of the issues that you deal with in this book, which are very heavy, homelessness and domestic violence, what is the aim of this book? Do you want your readers to do what after they've finished the book?
Yeah, I don't think I want the readers to. I want to entertain the readers, and I hope that doesn't cheapen the issues that are on the table. That's a lot of issues, and to take those. Look, if I can set a seed on those issues with some people who it's not on their horizon, or who could possibly help out or do something. Consider it. I don't know. That's great, but essentially it is fiction. No particular message. I'm a fiction writer. I guess that's what it is. But if you can set a seed in there and something good can come from it, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. Really enjoyed the book, Baz. Thank you so much for joining us on Nightlife.
Oh, it was a pleasure, mate. I'll be staying around for the quiz later.
Terrific, terrific. Baz Radburn talking about his new book, Subterranean.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.